Thankful for that tonight that I didn't have to experience it very long. So fast forward a little while. I stayed a member out at Hillsdale. I joined there in just a few days after that. And that summer I was baptized at Hillsdale and been a member there ever since. And I believe it was March of 2019. I'd already been an usher. I'd been a teacher. I teach the high school kids on Sunday mornings. Done some other stuff in church, and they asked me to be a deacon at Hillsdale. They asked me and my youngest brother, or my only younger brother, I should say, to become deacons there at church. So we accepted, and fast forward then a little bit longer into July, and Hillsdale had Eddie Tony was our pastor, and he had to step down due to some illness complications. He'd had a stroke, and he wasn't able to stand anymore, so he stepped down in November of 2018. We go into that summer, and we've been having enough visiting preachers coming through, and I've been hearing a whole lot of testimony about the call to preach and what it felt like and what it was, and it was one of those after four or five consecutive weeks of hearing that it was getting on me pretty bad, because I'd known for probably about a year to a year and a half that this might be the path the Lord had set for me, but I just didn't have any confirmation. I felt like I needed to have a little more certainty in that, because I'd always been under the assumption and understanding that if you can do anything else for the Lord, you want to take care of that first. You want to make sure that the preaching is what He wants you to do, because it's a heavy burden. It's not something to take lightly, for sure. And I thought, well, maybe if I become a deacon, that'll be enough. And he told me that wasn't enough. I got to where I was leading the singing at church some, helping my uncle out, giving him a break, and that wasn't enough either. So finally, I distinctly remember it the last Sunday in July of this year, of 2019. I was sitting there and I was leaned over the bench looking at the bench, and the brother that was preaching, I'll be honest with you, I feel bad, but I can't remember his name. I don't think he was qualified to be a pastor. He was just somebody filling in for a week for us. But he was talking about when he was called to preach, and I remember sitting there looking at the bench, and all at once everything kind of just started spinning, and everything just felt like everything was closing in on me. And then, not like I was lost, but just a feeling of I wasn't where I was supposed to be, and there was something that wasn't satisfied. So I got up, and I'd already talked to my wife about it, my father, and I just got up and I announced my call to preach that Sunday. I knew that's what he was telling me. He was telling me it was only going to continue to go downhill from there. So I announced my call to preach, go into August then. I became a deacon. We went through the ordination, became a deacon, and then I preached my first sermon September 15th, 2019. Been preaching ever since, I guess you could say. I've been real fortunate. I've had a lot of appointments. I've met a lot of new people, a lot of people I'd never seen. I've been to Westmoreland, been down to Smyrna, Tennessee. Now they've had me back to, I was actually there this morning. Me and my wife and two of my daughters went down there this morning for the third time. They're seeking a pastor down there at Old Path, and they had me down there for the third time this morning. Y'all may be familiar with Brother Gale Snoddy, but he's the one kind of taking care of that down there. So he had me back down there today. And I do desire an interest in your prayers, because it's, like I said, it's no easy task to stand up here. Brother Moran can attest to that, I'm sure. Any of you other brethren that may be preachers, y'all can attest to it as well. It's no easy task to stand up here. Me being kind of new to the ministry, it's unusual for me to preach two in the same day. So y'all pray for me on that too. Pray that I was studied up as much as I hope I am anyways, and that He'll lead. But this morning, the thought that I had was on faith. And not just faith in a general term, but more specifically how we apply it to our lives, and how as we go through our daily life, how that faith is supposed to be used. The Bible teaches us that true joy can only come through faith, but then there's also some chapters in Romans about exactly how we're supposed to live by faith. And he tells us about it. Well, I was thinking about that as I was studying for that late in the week, and I got to thinking about some of the stories in the Bible about faith and how it can work through us and how it works through our lives, and more importantly, how we can show it to others. And how we're supposed to display that faith to other people. And you all are, I'm sure, all familiar at this point with Paul in the Bible, how he said himself he was the chiefest of sinners because he persecuted Christians as a Roman soldier. He was there when they stoned Stephen. He was there when some bad stuff went down. He was part of it even. And the Lord converted him on the road to Damascus and called him to preach. Needless to say, with the path I've taken over the last year, I can relate a lot more to Paul than I used to be able to. But one of the stories that I think about a lot with Paul, if you want to turn your Bible with me and study along, we'll do some reading out of the book of Acts this evening. Chapter 16 is where we're going to be tonight. And you all have probably heard the story just as much as I have, but it's one of the sweeter stories in the Bible to me, because it kind of speaks to exactly how we're supposed to carry ourselves. And my sermon this morning was more of a generalized life lesson. This is a specific story of how faith can work through us, how important it is to display that faith, and how we persevere through all the bad things that are going to come our way as we try to do the Lord's work. Paul, after he was converted, goes through some pretty serious stuff. I can't remember all the counts, but he goes through several stints in jail. He's beaten several times. He's hurt. He gets mistreated a lot, but he continues to be faithful and do what he's supposed to do. And he's a good beacon for us to learn from and learn how we're supposed to go through life, especially in the times that we're in now. I think about that a lot, about not just politically, but just how crazy our world is getting nowadays and how hard it is sometimes to remain faithful. So we'll start reading here and learn how Paul went about it in this specific situation. This is one of his earlier trials here. Verse 16 in the book of Acts, chapter 16. Verse 16 says, "And it came to pass, as we went to prayer, a certain damsel possessed with a spirit of divination met us, which brought her masters much gain by soothsaying." So Paul and Silas have broke off here from Barnabas, and I'm losing track of the other one, but Timothy is also with them, and Luke, I believe, is the one writing this here, but they've went off themselves on mission work here. This is the second mission that they've gone out on. And when we say mission, it ain't like me driving to Smyrna or Bowling Green. We're talking about missions that took them days of traveling. They had to walk for days and days. So I think about that a lot and I admire that they were able to do that and wanted to do it. But they've been out now and they're doing this, and it says, "They came to pass as we went to prayer." Keep in mind here, as they went to prayer, a certain damsel possessed with a spirit of divination met us. So divination meaning somebody who was and it says soothsaying, meaning somebody who could tell the future. They're like a fortune teller or somebody that wanted you to believe they had some kind of spiritual powers above what we're supposed to have. Usually this came from the devil, if we're being honest about it, but even at the very least, it was something that was powers that they wanted you to believe they had that nobody else has. So she comes up to him and says, "The same followed Paul," verse 17 says, "The same followed Paul and us and cried, saying, These men are the servants of the Most High God, which show unto us the way of salvation. And this did she many days. But Paul, being grieved, turned and said to the Spirit, I command thee in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her. And he came out, out the same hour." Sorry, I get my words confused there. So a couple of thoughts that come to me here when I read that specific part. The first thing being that she recognized who they were immediately. So that tells me that Paul must have carried himself in a different way. Paul and Silas both did. They didn't carry themselves just as an average person. She recognized who they were. That's why she was following them around. This demon recognized them even if she didn't. The demon that was in her recognized who they were and was following them around. Paul gets upset with this. Why would he get upset about a demon claiming who he was? Letting him know, you would think kind of on some level that would actually be a good thing that he's recognized. The reason why, you don't have to flip with me, but I got to thinking about that too. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, it's talking about being unequally yoked. Like I say, you don't have to follow with me, I'll read it. But it talks about being unequally yoked in marriage. But I believe this is important, that we understand that being unequally yoked in marriage is important, but it's also important in our daily lives and who we associate with. It's very important too. Because it says, "Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God, as God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people." Now the reason that's important here, and relating this to why Paul did this, is this demon saying it is almost like it's trying to work with God. Paul had to make the separation here. He had to let everybody else know that was watching that they were not together. They did not work together. They were not of the same mold. They were not of the same works. So it was important here that Paul make that separation and make that declaration in front of everybody and command this devil to get out, or not devil, but this demon to get out. So it's important that you understand tonight that who you're with, the company you keep, has bearing on what you are and who you are. It can damage you. It can damage your testimony. If you don't separate yourself from all that, it can be a huge problem. Now, what a lot of people say is, well, but how are we supposed to go out and help the lost if we don't get out among them? You can be among them. You don't have to be one of them. That's the difference. We're all going to be around people on a daily basis that we know are not saved, that we know aren't in church, but we can be an influence to them. We can help them. But that don't mean we got to go to them with where the places they want to go. We need to influence them to want to come to places we know we need to be going. That's the way it should work, and that's what Paul's doing here. So it says, and he came out the same hour. So it doesn't mean this was a long, drawn-out process like Hollywood wants you to think, some kind of exorcism that took all kinds of hard work and effort. It says it came out the same hour. So I picture that to mean pretty quickly, maybe even about as fast as you snap your fingers, that demon came out. Other thing I noticed here was it says that she was a female, but it was a male demon that was in her. So that tells me that anybody can be possessed at any time. At least at this point in time, that's what could happen. It's no respecter of persons. Evil can capture people just like anything else can. Doesn't respect who you are or where you came from. But we'll continue on here. We won't spend too much time on that because what I want to talk about is a little deeper into the chapter here. Verse 19 says, "And when her masters saw that the hope of her gains was gone, they caught Paul and Silas and drew them into the marketplace under the rulers and brought them to the magistrate, saying, 'These men, being Jews, do exceedingly trouble our city and teach customs which are not lawful for us to receive, neither to observe, being Romans.'" So they understand that they're Romans and they don't need to be doing what the Jews do. Even they understand that some things need to be separate based upon style of living, maybe where you're from. Spiritually, that's out the window. We're Gentiles, but we're supposed to worship the Lord just like the Jews, just like everybody else. We're all supposed to be on the same level when it comes to worship, when it comes to how we're supposed to approach Jesus. But he says here, "And when her masters saw that the hope of their gains was gone, they caught Paul and Silas and drew them into the marketplace under the rulers." Think about how our world operates nowadays. People tend to use people. They tend to use others, just take advantage of them over and over and just keep on using them until they use them up. What this is saying here is that at the point that she was no longer valuable to them, then they got upset. People tend to just let things go. Just let it be, let the sleeping dog lie. There's 400 sayings that go along with what this situation was. But what I understand this to be was that she was out doing the soothsaying. They were potentially making money off of it. They were profiting from it. And they were okay with the sin going on until Paul took this demon out of her, commanded the demon to come out. Then she was no more profit to them, and that upset them. Think about how our politics works nowadays. People will let a lot of things, maybe they're a little shady, go until it starts getting into their pockets. Then it's a problem. Kind of the same situation here. We got to separate that stuff. You got to stay focused on what the Lord wants from you first. And that's what you got to let go and what you got to work with. But we'll keep reading here. Verse 21 said, "And teach customs which are not lawful for us to receive, neither to observe, being Romans." So they're trying to keep this separated because they're Romans. Not because of their spiritual standing, but just because they're Romans. So continue on here. Verse 22 says, "And the multitude rose up together against them. And the magistrates rent off their clothes and commanded to beat them. And when they had laid many stripes upon them, they cast them into prison, charging the jailer to keep them safely, who, having received such a charge, thrust them into the inner prison and made their feet fast in the stocks." So the inner prison, I had to look some of this stuff up just to understand, kind of get the mental picture of all this a little bit better in my head. The inner stocks is like the belly of the dungeon. It's like the worst part of the dungeon. And old days, they had stages that they kept you in based upon your crimes. This is about as bad as they can view it. They put you in the deepest, darkest part of the dungeon and put you in stocks. Stocks at this time were basically two pieces of wood that locked together over your legs, over your feet. Sometimes they locked your hands in it too. So basically, you're going to be really uncomfortable in the deepest, darkest, coldest, worst part of the dungeon is where they put these two guys. And all he did was exorcise the demon out of this girl. He helped her. Is what he did, but all he did was exercise it, and you see what it got him into. What we're supposed to learn from this is doing the Lord's will is not always going to be comfortable. It's not always going to help us. It's not always going to be the best thing for our health. It's going to be what's best for Jesus Christ, and that's why we do it. We don't do it for personal gain. We don't do it for anything for our own benefit. We do it for him, and you do it faithfully 100% with every part of your every fiber of your being, I should say. You do it that way, and you will be blessed for it, whether it's here or whether it's later. You're going to receive a blessing for it. The Lord says, "Any work done in his name does not return unto him void." We may suffer for it. We may pay for it, whether it's here or whether it's later. We're going to answer for it, but it's going to be in a positive way when he has something to say about it. And that's why we do it. So it says they were beaten. They had their clothes ripped off. They were beaten. It says they put stripes on them. They cast them into the prison, charging the jailer to keep them safely. So not only were they thrown in this part of the prison, but this poor jailer was sitting over here, and they said, "You keep watch on them. You make sure they don't get out. You stay on top of it." So they brought another guy into this sin now. This guy really didn't have anything to do with it, but this sin that they've committed now against Paul, maybe not sin's a strong word, but at least this going against God, they brought this other guy into it. And it says, "And at midnight," verse 25, "and at midnight Paul and Silas prayed and sang praises unto God, and the prisoners heard them." The worst situation you can dream up would be to be imprisoned against your will, captured, kidnapped, held, whatever you want to call it, but to be taken against your will and be put in this situation. That's the worst thing, in my opinion, that can happen before death. We live in a free country. There's a lot of people that don't have that privilege tonight. There's places tonight where people who believe in what we're reading tonight are still jailed. They're still thrown in dungeons. They're still treated this way. We have a freedom here, and we need to use it. Right here, it's telling you, in the worst situation they could have been in, all they wanted to do was pray and worship the Lord. That is faith. That is faith to a T. We need to be proud of the fact that we can have that much faith and we can display that much faith here tonight freely. It is an honor and a privilege. And suddenly there was a great earthquake so that the foundations of the prison were shaken, and immediately all the doors were open and everyone's bands were loosed. It says everyone's bands were loosed, not just Paul and Silas. So you've got all these other prisoners. It doesn't name them, but you better believe there were more prisoners in there. I mean, Roman culture says they were notorious for capturing people for stupid reasons. Just call it like it is. They were notorious for it. So there's all kinds of people in this prison cell with them, or no, not a cell, but in this dungeon. And it says they all came loose. So every person in there has the opportunity to leave at right this moment. So keep that in mind as we keep reading. All the doors came off because of this earthquake. And the keeper of the prison, awaking out of his sleep and seeing the prison doors open, he drew out his sword and would have killed himself, supposing that the prisoners had been fled. But Paul cried with a loud voice, saying, "Do thyself no harm, for we are all here." The influence Paul and Silas had on these people that were in this prison, that were no doubt some kind of violent criminals. Some of them may have just been thieves, but some of them were probably violent criminals of some sort. They all froze right where they were at. Why? Even a criminal can be testified to. Even a criminal can hear the truth. Even the vilest, worst person on earth can be saved. I almost picture it like they were in shock. Could you imagine sitting there and an earthquake happening? After these guys are praying and testifying and praising the Lord so strong that it shook the steel gates off of these cells, and they're sitting there looking at all this happening, and this jailer gets up and he's going to kill himself because he was charged to take care of these guys and make sure they don't get out. So he's fearing for his life at this point because he knows he's failed already, and no part of it was his fault, but he knows he's failed. So Paul hollers in there and he says, "Do thyself no harm, for we are all here." All here. That means nobody got up, nobody moved a muscle. So all these criminals are sitting there with these doors open and could have took off at any point. I don't know, I probably watched too many movies in my life, but if you ever seen a riot scene in a movie in a prison, it's just chaos. They're running back and forth, trying to climb the walls, killing each other, doing whatever. And it says, we're all here. So I take that to mean they didn't move a muscle. They sat there because they were in awe of what the Lord was doing. They recognized it. And it says, then he called for a light and sprang in and came trembling and fell down before Paul and Silas and brought them out and said, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" Now, if this ain't proof of what your faith can do for others, I don't know what is. This right here is living, breathing proof that if you do what you're supposed to do at all times, if you follow the Lord, if you pray, if you keep that faith, he's going to give you an opportunity. He's going to give you an opportunity to help somebody else. This jailer, until just three verses ago, had nothing to do with this story. And now he's become a focal point because he saw all this happen. Paul and Silas didn't do anything but praise God and sing. And he wants to be saved like them. He recognizes something is different. Your greatest testimony can be at a time when you never open your mouth. Your testimony can be the way you carry yourself, the way that you carry yourself in this world. Because as it deteriorates, we're going to be rising up. We're going to stand out amongst the crowd. The rose among the thorns it talks about as Jesus Christ himself was. We can have some part of that. We can be that for this world. You can be that light for this community. It's not that difficult to do. You just have to be willing to do it. You have to be willing to pray and show what the Lord has done for you. Don't hide your light under a bushel. Show it to everybody. Don't be ashamed of it. It's that simple. And it says, he brought them out and said, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" And they said, "Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved. And thy house," that's important. He says, "and thy house." So that tells me that at this time, it was going like the Lord planned for it to go, in that he was the leader of the house, his own house. So when he goes back testifying to his family's going to listen. They're going to be encouraged. They're going to want to have what he has. It's the ripple effect of faith, prayer, and doing what the Lord wants us to do. This one guy is being influenced, but it's going to carry out throughout his entire house. And you no doubt know that they're going to carry that out to other people. All it takes is one act sometimes. That's all it takes is one act of faith, and it can have a ripple effect that goes on forever. So he says, in thy house, and they, in verse 32 says, and they spake unto him the word of the Lord and to all that were in his house. And he took them the same hour of the night and washed their stripes and was baptized, he and all his straightway. And when he had brought them into his house, he set meat before them and rejoiced, believing in God with all his house. So we went from 7-8 verses ago, he was supposed to be taking care of them in prison and making sure they didn't get out, to now he's worshiping the Lord with them. Don't take long, does it? You can change somebody's heart that fast. That's all it takes. I'm living proof that it can change that fast because my heart changed that fast. If you're here tonight and you've been saved, your heart changed that fast too. You have a moment in time where your heart changed that fast. And you may, everybody has a different description of it, but we all have the same point. You see a love in people. You see a love in yourself that you didn't see before. You have this love now for other people. Just like Paul and Silas have, they have this love in their heart to help these people. He experiences it. He helps his own house. It says they were baptized. To my understanding, I believe this means he took Paul and Silas out of the prison to his house to take care of them. So that fear he had where he was going to kill himself a few verses ago has now become he's taking them to his house and feeding them. That tells me the power that the Lord has to change our opinions on things. He can comfort us at times. He can take care of us at times. When we think all the chips are down and that we're going to struggle and things are going to be bad, he can turn it around. He can make you feel entirely different about it in a heartbeat, and that's exactly what he did for this man. He took him to his house, and he was feeding him and taking care of him, washing their stripes, taking care of these men. 35 says, and when it was day, the magistrate sent the sergeant, saying, let those men go. A little late, wasn't they? But it says, and the keeper of the prison told this saying to Paul, the magistrates have sent to let you go. Now therefore depart and go in peace. So the jailer's just kind of wanting them to go ahead and go in peace. Says that he wants them to go in peace. But Paul said unto them, verse 37 says, but Paul said unto them, they have beaten us openly, uncondemned, being Romans, and have cast us into prison. And now do they thrust us out privily? Nay, verily, but let them come themselves and fetch us out. This is an important part, because what happened here was Paul revealed that he was a Roman. First off, he says that we are Romans, or I'm sorry, being Romans. Romans had privileges that not everybody else had in these days. Roman soldiers, just a claim to be Roman, automatically, socially, puts you on a level higher than everybody else. They weren't aware that these two men were Romans at this point. And he says, being Romans, they instantly got afraid because they knew then they messed up. What I take away from this is you treat everybody equally regardless of their background, regardless of where they're from, regardless of what their original spiritual past may be. You treat them all equally and understand that the Lord created us all. What they are shouldn't matter. You should treat everybody the same regardless of where they come from or what their background is. Them being Romans shouldn't have mattered, but he made it matter because of what they did. You can get yourself in quite the pickle if you ain't careful sometimes with the way you treat people. That's what I take away from this. And we need to always understand that we're all children of God. He created us all. And we need to treat each other fairly and equally. But he says, and they try to thrust us out privily, meaning try to thrust us out in secret. So they're going to make a public spectacle of us yesterday, and now they want to try to send us out in secret because of what they did. It ain't going to work like that. What we do to people publicly and the way we treat people is public. It's public for a reason. We do that for a display. We try to show people up. We try to do things. Now, I'm not talking about us individuals. I'm talking about just human race. As humankind, we do it. People want to make themselves feel like they're above somebody else, like they're better than somebody else. That's what these guys are doing, trying to display their power, and it backfired on them. It's blown up in their face now. So he says, nay, verily, but let them come themselves and fetch us out. Not only were they making a display for humans, they were making a display for God. Because these people needed to understand God's power. And this is an opportunity to display God's power once again without ever having to open their mouth, without having to do anything embarrassing, without having to do anything to harm anybody. This was a chance for them to show and display, because now you have the jailer's testimony, you have his family's testimony, you have Paul and Silas's testimony. Here in a second, you're going to see you have the other brethren that were out on this mission trip with them, that you have their testimony. The ripple effect is taking over quickly. It's already starting to change things. And it says, 38, and the sergeants told these words unto the magistrates, and they feared when they heard that they were Romans. So they recognized they made a big boo-boo is what happened. They should have never treated these guys this way anyways, but because they're Romans, now they've got a double problem. They've got a bigger problem than they thought they had. And they came and besought them and brought them out and desired them to depart out of the city. What that sounds like to me is they went and they kind of tried to sweet talk them a little bit and just ask them, if y'all don't mind, y'all just head on out quickly and let's not make a big deal out of this if we don't have to. When we mess up, when we make a mistake, we want things over with quickly. We want to move past it, forget it, not think about it anymore. Don't always work that way. The Lord says judgment is His. If He decides it'll be over quickly, it'll be over quickly. If He decides we're going to pay for it a while, we're going to pay for it a while. It's all under His control. And that's what He's trying to get them to understand right here. You're not going to send us out in secret. You're not going to send us away and you get away with it without anybody knowing it. You're going to answer for it. We're going to let it be known that you made this mistake for God's cause, not for their own. Finish up here. It says, and they came and besought them and brought them out and desired them to depart out of the city. And they went out of the prison and entered into the house of Lydia. And when they had seen the brethren, they comforted them and they departed. That reads to me like they met up with the brethren, explained to them what had happened. Could you imagine the testimony that had to be? Could you imagine what that was like to sit down and hear Paul and Silas tell that story at that moment? I mean, I love to hear testimonies. There's nothing sweeter to me than to hear people get up and testify. Because no matter what background we have, how far differently we were raised, how our parents raised us, where we were at, when we were saved, what era of time, what decade, it doesn't matter. They all have one thing in common, and I love to hear them. I love to know that. I love to know that if I don't make it home tonight, I'm going to see every one of you again. That's a blessing. And it's a blessing a lot of us don't take seriously sometimes. We don't put enough weight and stock in that. That it's important. The youth need to hear these testimonies. I'm learning this really quickly as I go around preaching, that there's a lot of youth that are in these churches that all they hear is, well, back in the old days, everybody got up shouting and all that, but we just don't do it no more. Why don't we? What's stopping us? It ain't the Lord. It ain't His fault. But I'm not saying you got to get up and shout. I'm not saying you got to say a peep. What I'm saying is if you follow the Lord, the service will be in His name and it's going to be good for everybody involved. But if He wants you to shout, if He wants you to sing, if He wants you to get up and hug somebody, give your testimony and tell them, do it. Because you never know who's watching. You never know who's paying attention. I'm going to maybe embarrass Brother Moran here a little bit, but I was young the last time that I heard him preach, young enough that I was probably playing with toys and wasn't really listening. I've not had the pleasure to hear him preach in my adult life that I can remember. But I've heard enough other people talk about his preaching. I have no doubt there's been a lot of people helped by his preaching. That's important. It's important for the youth to understand that those generations continue to be passed down all the way back to Paul and Silas, all the way back to Abraham and Moses, their testimonies, what they could tell people. It's all been passed down, and that's very important because this youth, they're not hearing these stories anymore. All they have, they're letting TV raise them, phones, the internet. They're letting all that stuff raise their kids nowadays. They're not hearing the good stuff. All they're hearing is all the stuff that the world wants them to think. I'm telling you, it's important. If you have a testimony here tonight, share it. Share it with somebody because you never know who it could affect, no matter how simple you think it is. I went for a long time not giving my testimony, not telling about when the Lord saved me because I honestly thought it was so simple it wouldn't help nobody. And I'm going to say something because He's not here tonight, but the first time that I can really remember breaking down one night was probably about 4 years ago during revival, 4 or 5 years ago during revival. The Lord got on me something awful one night. He had been burning me up all night. And I was sitting there and we were singing and then we had the preaching and He was telling me, you're going to say something tonight. You're going to get up and you're going to tell it. And I sat there and I sat there and I sat there through the preaching. Boy, by the time the sermon was over and that last song hit, well, I couldn't wait anymore. My guts was turning over. Felt like I was about to just blow up sitting there. Finally got done. I got up and gave my testimony. And I gave a lengthy testimony. Now, it wasn't a sermon, but I gave a pretty lengthy testimony and explained exactly what happened to me. And I still remember to this day, I won't say who was preaching just because that part's not important, but the sermon was on no-so salvation. And the thought I had was at one time I didn't know for sure I had salvation. In my teen years, I struggled with it. I had to think about it. I had to pray about it because mine came so easy, I questioned it. I thought, man, if everybody else has such a hard time getting it, why did I get it so easy? Was it real or did I just dream it? As 9 years old, did I just think something good happened? Well, I'll condense a long story here. I don't want to get into that whole testimony again. I'll condense it here for you. But the Lord showed me. He showed me that I was saved. He gave me a dream one night that erased all my worries and all my concerns. Now, I'm not saying he gave me a dream like he gave the soothsayer a dream. I'm saying he gave me a dream as a way of telling me that everything's going to be all right, that I was saved, and I've not had a reason to question it since. So the point being, when I gave my testimony that night, I stood there and I gave it, and I thought, you know what, Lord, if you're going to burn me up this bad over it, I'm going to say it, I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to shut up. I found out later on that evening that I had a nephew over there that had tears rolling down his face because he had almost the exact same experience and was wondering about his own salvation. He didn't know if he had it or not. And he said he's not doubted it since then either. So my point is, just because you think it's not important, just because you think yours is too simple or that yours isn't going to help somebody, you never know who's listening and who it can help. And I can honestly say this nephew has gone on to where he's got pretty much any college scholarship he wants. He's going to be able to go anywhere he wants. But most importantly, he's been in church every day since then. He's now one of our ushers at Hillsdale. He is now our Sunday school superintendent. So it's important. And I'm not putting myself up on a pedestal. Don't take that to be what I'm saying tonight. I'm saying I learned early that testimony is very important. Just like Paul and Silas did right here. Them praying and singing at midnight in this prison has changed history. It has had an effect on history to this day because us studying this lesson tonight may help somebody. The ripple effect is still being felt in 2020 from what Paul and Silas did that night. So you never know what yours may do for somebody. And I'm not going to lie to you, I really didn't see the sermon going this way. This was not the thought that I had. But as I got up here and I started seeing some faces and thinking about it, I believe this is what he wanted out of it. I believe he wants us to understand that we have an effect on people beyond our imaginations. And we got to always be about his work and show what he has done for us. You don't have to open your mouth. Maybe you don't think you can sing. Maybe you don't think you can do certain things. The Lord knows. Use what he does give you. Use what you're comfortable using because it can help somebody. Don't be afraid and don't hide that light under a bushel. That's my feeble effort tonight. I do appreciate the opportunity to come here. I say this a lot when I go places, but it truly is a privilege to stand for the Lord. I didn't realize that the first two or three times when I got up there and I was shaking so hard I was about to shake the book board over. But nowadays I realize how much of a blessing it really is. Because when you go through life like I have, my father was a preacher, my oldest brother was a preacher, my grandfather was a preacher. You kind of have expectations laid on you that maybe you don't always deserve. You know, and I can still remember being a little kid and hearing people say, oh, your daddy's a preacher, huh? You know, I know about them preacher's kids. You know, I remember people saying things like it. Matter of fact, my daddy-in-law was one of them. He's now my daddy-in-law. At the time, he wasn't. He was worried about it at that point. But point being, I heard a lot of things. I heard a lot of stuff put on me, and I had unrealistic expectations put on me. But I've grown to appreciate those expectations because it kept me in line. It made me make sure that I followed what God wanted me to do, and he's been in it since the beginning. He's led to this point. So it really is a privilege. And I do appreciate the fact that he's given me the opportunity not only to come this way, but all the appointments I have. I've been really fortunate. I've got no less than two appointments coming up for the next 3 months. And I've got one or two churches that have already asked me to come back on Sunday mornings that are seeking pastors. So y'all continue to pray for me and my family as we continue to try to do the Lord's work. It can't be understated how important that is, that I have people's prayers everywhere that I go. It's very important. And no amount of words can ever say how much I truly appreciate it and how much I love you all. And I appreciate this opportunity and hope one day maybe to come back once again. Thank you all very much.